You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Every time I talk to Tucker Max, my life changes. This is an intense one. He wrote this post that I read called Doomer Optimism, or it was about Doomer Optimism, which he can explain what that means. And the reason I heard about the article is I saw two people in a Facebook group that I'm a member of. I saw them arguing, where one person was insisting that the admin of the group kick Tucker off the group because of this article. And that's happened to me when I've had particularly controversial articles. It's always crazy when you see people explicitly trying to censor someone, a group that they were a member of for years and that everybody knew him and everything, just because of something he wrote or an opinion he had. So it's part one. And in part two, he also discusses not only the article, but what he's going to do about it. Here's Tucker. How else are things going? You're not at Scribe Media now full time.
No.
You're writing, you're enjoying life. Like what? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always curious. Like, and we'll get to the doomer optimism stuff in a second, or I mean, maybe this won't even be for the podcast, but I'm always curious with you because you are a super ambitious person. You're a great writer. You've done great things. And then how do you pull yourself back from ambition to say, you know what, for a while, I'm going to focus on family and friends and whatever?
You know, it's funny. I'm going to answer your question. Let me come to it circularly a little bit. So psychedelic medicine has gone through a lot of the VC community. And of course, mm-hmm. a lot of them are doing it wrong, et cetera. But this one girl who's like, I don't really even know who she is. I don't even know her name. I can't remember it on Twitter. But she's very pretty. So a lot of people pay attention to her. And I'm not even trying to troll her. It's just there's almost no women in that community. And none of them, very few are attractive. And so you know just how the world works. And so she wrote this long set of posts shitting on all these VCs she knew who had done psychedelic medicine. And her point was the negative thing she pointed to, it's just so amazing, was that it killed their ambition, right? And a bunch of people were like, no, it didn't kill their ambition. It woke them up and showed them how fucked up the whole system that they were in and the game they were playing was, right? And so, like, to answer your question, the way I've dealt with ambition is that I have realized especially over the last 3 years, I thought I understood this 3 years ago, but about 3 years ago is when I really went deep into, I started therapy years ago, but psychedelic medicine added to my therapeutic practice about 3 years ago, and it really got intense. And that's when I realized, oh, wow, almost everything I'm doing and everything I think about that I want and all my frames are totally, they're not mine. Fucked up or not, they're not even mine. And so the way I've dealt with ambition is to
define frame. Like, give me an example of a frame.
Okay. That I need to be rich mm-hmm. or that I need to make money or that I need to be successful or what successful is. Right? These are all, for another name for a frame is an assumption, right? Or a starting point, or a dogma, or a philosophy.
Or I'll give you an example from your life. I remember when we met, you had just come off the filming of I Hope They Still Serve Beer in Hell, and you were really into the Hollywood thing of like, I hope this movie is a success, and you were really disappointed when that movie didn't turn out how you had hoped.
It was way more disappointment. But yes. But so the point is, the way I've dealt with ambition is to get to the root of it. Why am I so concerned with my success and how am I defining success? And once just answering those two questions, we could talk about for hours, days. But to sum it all, distill it down as much as possible, I realized that almost everything I considered, every assumption I had about success was not mine. It was an assumption that I had learned or taken on from the culture. And when I actually unpacked it, I realized almost none of it I actually cared about or agreed with when I really thought about it. And so then when I stripped everything away, what I was left with of the things that I actually cared about, I only really care about the things, being with the people I love, doing things that matter to them, and building a world that I want to live in. And I mean, when I say a world, I don't mean like Africa. I don't even mean like New York City. I mean like building the immediate community that I live in. And nothing else matters to me. Now, if other stuff happens, cool, great. Like, I'll take it. Like, I'm not against more conventional definitions of success or whatever. But once I really dove into all of my stuff, I realized that's the only thing that mattered to me. And everything else was bullshit.
Let me ask you this, because I agree with a large amount of that. And yet, I'm still driven forward by, you know, we're hierarchical beings.
You can transcend that.
Can you? Because look, it's 10 million years of chimpanzees having hierarchies from alpha to omega.
You're right.
Part of those metrics are either, you know, success, i.e., you know, followers or likes or whatever, or money, like some way in which we measure the hierarchy. And another thing about money, not wealth, but money, is that that's how you build kind of the world that you want to live in to some extent. Not always, but to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are there's deep assumptions in both of those things you just said that I don't agree with and that I don't think are true. They're stories. They're true for you because they're stories you're telling yourself. They're not true in any objective sense. So yeah, primates are clearly hierarchical beings. Our biology, it's baked in. There's no doubt about that. But the cool hack around that, or the cool frame that I learned, was that I get to decide what my hierarchy is.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with that.
Okay, but agreeing with it and actually putting it to play in your life are different things, right? Like most people don't even understand hierarchy, whatever. But even if they do, they accept hierarchies that they're either born into or that they're told are important. I have rejected all of those things. Finally, like it's funny you brought up Hollywood because that's a hierarchy and I was totally bought in at that point. Even when I was in it, I thought I wasn't, but I was, of course. And now it's like, no, I don't care.
I think what's made a lot of successful people different is that they're still in a hierarchy, but they choose their own hierarchy. So like instead of having, most people, for instance, want to be in the wealth hierarchy, but there's other things like, I rejected the wealth hierarchy for a while. I went into stand-up comedy, or anybody who goes into the writing hierarchy is rejecting the wealth hierarchy, the traditional success hierarchy. So I think we've gone into untraditional hierarchies, but I can't say I've broken out of them.
Dude, you don't even see it. You keep saying, you can pick your hierarchy, but then you keep talking about other people's hierarchies.
Okay.
Comedy has an established hierarchy that you don't have to fucking buy into. I'm the definition of some writing absolutely has a standardly accepted hierarchy. I never bought into any of it. I broke it. I beat all of those motherfuckers. Never once bought into it. Never.
Yeah.
Same with publishing, right? Never once bought into it, right? Instead, I built my own, right? That is the thing with hierarchy, is that defining your own is the first step to transcending it. Then really, you can actually transcend it. Truly, you can.
I always felt the way I would always put it, and maybe this is not the way I should have been thinking about it, but I would always be interested in diversifying hierarchies. So I had more than one. So if one is not working out, I have others that I'm diversifying into. But you're right. Maybe they're all standard though.
That's a great strategy if you're just trying to make yourself super miserable.
Maybe really that's what's happened.
No, and I'm not.
By the way, I've never seen you laugh so much either. So clearly something good's happening.
Well, no, I'm not trying to shit on you, man. It's just I'm going to be in a bunch of different hierarchies is a really good way to have to monitor what a bunch of different people think of you. and it fit into their categories of what matter. It's like, oh God, I can't imagine a worse way to make myself miserable, or a more effective way than I need to measure myself by 10 different scales instead of one, right? No, the step beyond that, if you ever choose to take it, James, is to decide you are going to create your own hierarchy. And then the step beyond that is to let go of all hierarchies.
So let me ask you a question. How do you choose? And look, I defined the word choose yourself, or I coined it for my book, at least, which you helped with. How do you really start from scratch choosing your own hierarchy?
Man, that...
And what hierarchy are you in?
It's a great question. The hierarchy I'm in? How well am I living up to the best version of myself possible?
Okay.
That's how I measure myself. Like, literally today. I took my kids to town. We ran some errands, did some fun stuff. And at every moment, I'm not asking myself, am I a good parent? Because now how you define good is depending on what hierarchy you're in. I'm asking myself, am I honoring the commitments I've made to my children? And am I being the best version of myself possible? Mm. That's the only hierarchy I measure myself on. The voluntary commitments I have entered into and my belief about myself.
So when's there been a time when you felt you slipped on your own hierarchy? Because I feel the best way
Every
to define day. A positive is to look at a negative.
Every day.
All right.
Dude.
All right.
Dude, I mean, I'd love to sit here and tell you that I'm a perfect parent. Wouldn't that be awesome? I'd love to be that. I'm not, right? So like this morning, my son, my youngest, Deacon, he did something and I got upset and I yelled at him and I snapped at him and then he got upset and all. I made a commitment to my kids not to snap and yell at them, right? I screw up all the time, man. It's like, it's a difficult thing for me sometimes, like, because they're real good at pushing buttons, man. My kids are experts at finding my buttons and just hitting them repeatedly, dude. They're so good at it.
I mean, right? That's the only thing kids get good at the first 5 years of their life. Like, that's the only thing. Everybody, I always view that every human being is a scientist. Well, for kids, for babies up to 5 years old, you're their only laboratory.
They're masters at it. Mine are amazing. But the way I get upset in the moment and then I'm like, okay, hold on. Like, I'm being upset. And then obviously in our family, we have a saying, everyone makes mistakes. All you have to do is say you're sorry and clean it up, right? So apologize, try, make it right. And then I realize, hey, listen, the fact that I'm getting angry at them, what's the saying? Triggers are teachers? Okay. I'm getting angry at them means that there is work here right now for me to do. Right. And now the other side of it is I actually was half proud of myself because there were like four or five things that happened that normally would have set me off that I was able to take a step back from and not get upset. And then it was like the sixth thing that my bishop or deacon did. I was like, all right, that's it.
Yeah.
Like,
they're not going to rest until they hit that button. Well, but let me ask you this too, because this
really is
a hierarchy.
I don't think he's doing it on purpose. It's not him. It's not. That's what a very codependent or very toxic dynamic. He's two and a half, man. He's totally focused on himself. Like, I'm not even a separate being to him. I exist only for to serve him in his own mind, right? So that's why I'm never upset at him. Like, he's fussing because he has a need he needs to meet, and he's learned this is the way he's going to get it. And so now I've got to deal with that, you know?
So Tucker, here's another question related to it is, when's the last time you did something you didn't really want to do, but you felt like somehow obligated to do it? Because this is related to the ambition thing as well.
I mean, are we counting like I had to pay property tax?
No, not stuff like that, which is like, but like, for instance, going to a conference that you didn't really feel like speaking at, or
no,
I mean, not,
no.
not
I don't
that
do that
example.
Shit anymore.
But
it's been a long time.
All right, good. Yeah, I would say for me as well, but then I always sit back and wonder, well, maybe I should have. I do the should have thing.
Well,
like, instead of doing a past year and a half of studying chess, for instance, maybe I should have started new businesses or blah, blah, blah.
So one of the, let me, this actually might be really helpful for you. One of the things I've done, especially over the last year, is really focused on places in my life where I have shame-based thinking or shame-based words. Should have is a great one. Should have according to who?
Right.
Oh, no, but you've said should have. I wish I like in 15 minutes we've been on, I bet you've said it at least 5 times.
Okay, because I'm should have according to me. Like, and I do agree really? That it's a bad word.
No, yeah. No, it's not a bad word. It depends how you're using it, right? It's shame-based.
I'm using it poorly.
Well, see, but like, Matt, now you're judging yourself, right? So self-judgment and shame-based language are amazing indicators of underlying issues to deal with if you're willing to actually look at it, right? Like my mother-in-law is like this. She's a wonderful, incredible woman in so many ways. But man, she is so fucking hard on herself. And she uses so much shame-based language and usually about herself. It used to be about others. And she's done so much psychedelic work and therapy. And she doesn't really do it to others that much anymore. It's just all on herself now. And you can see the way she talks about herself. And you're very similar. Like, I can't ever think of times you've ever shamed anyone or judged anyone else. Like, very rare. That was very, very rare to come in. Yeah. You do it to yourself, though, dude. I mean, you heap that shit on yourself. It's crazy.
Well, I remember how we first contacted each other. It was like over a decade ago. I was having a quote-unquote Twitter fight with somebody who was bashing one of my books when she also even admitted she hadn't even read it. She just didn't like the title. and you wrote me out of the blue. We had never spoken before. You wrote me out of the blue and said, why are you having a Twitter fight with this useless person and who's not even in the same category and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was a very encouraging letter. And then we got in touch and got to know each other very well. But you've been reminding me of this for a decade.
Well, whenever you decide to actually turn and look at it, man, you may find dealing with this stuff always sucks at first. It's never fun. But the other side, what's through it, is usually, at least in my experience, well worth it. I mean, ask yourself, what would your life be like if you were able to, say, turn down your shame and self-judgment, let's say 30%? What would your life be like?
I think it's not necessarily shame and self-judgment. It's like, I wonder why other people will try to judge. I feel bad when other people are inaccurately judging me or shaming me. And then, of course, I fall into it with
that,
which
would not bother you if you didn't have that doubt yourself.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think that it's an insecurity of mine since childhood that unless I achieve X, Y, and Z.
Where do you think insecurities come from, my brother?
Yeah, I'm sure they come from
deeply internalized shame.
Yeah. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So, Tucker, but this in a roundabout way, this brings us into doomer optimism, which you've written about. I had never heard the term before, actually, until a few weeks ago when I heard it from you. And one thing I will point out is that rather than, you know, I read your article about doomer optimism, and then I saw on Facebook something really weird, which is that someone who reposted your article got shamed himself for reposting your article. Yeah, and course. Then I know it's a good article. Like I've written articles where people have then contacted me and told me they were unfriended for reposting my article. So yeah. Then I know, like, why would someone unfriend somebody else for reposting someone else's article? So I said, there's, and obviously I knew this was interesting because you and I have spoken about these topics and I very much agree with them. But first off, you define doomer optimism in the very beginning of your article.
The shit's going to hit the fan, but if we all do our work, we're going to be okay.
Yeah. And so what led you to, and then by the way, then you start painting this horrific scenario over the next few years, and then you start the optimistic side, which is also how you personally are dealing with it and preparing yourself. Not prepping yourself, but preparing yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What led you up to this?
Look. It's I when people ask me that, I'm always like, have you been paying attention the last 2 years? Because all kinds of shit happened.
Like, look, I agree with you. I was doing Instagram Lives about these topics in March 2020. But it was because I personally was scared. Like, I didn't like what I was seeing. Not only, of course, the pandemic was scary, as you pointed out in the beginning of your article, but then suddenly how easily people capitulated to policies that might have been incorrect, but they just capitulated without asking.
Rolled over is the term I would use. I mean, dude, like, I am watching Australia and cannot believe how quickly and completely a country of supposedly free Westerners rolled the fuck over.
Like, well, what's going on in Australia?
They have prison camps for non-vaccinated. People are like, no, they're quarantine camps. Motherfucker, you're not allowed to leave. Like, they're prison camps. If you leave, they chase you down and arrest you and bring you back. They are prison camps.
Really true? I have not heard about it.
It's all over. Well, it's not all over the mainstream news because, of course, they're not going to talk about that. Dude, I mean, go. The Australian government doesn't even hide it anymore, actually.
All right, That's my favorite.
There's all kinds of stuff about it. Yeah. No, I mean, so, as far as I know, and as far as anything I've seen, they're not death camps yet. My guess is, this sounds fucking horrible, and God knows I don't want this to happen. The thing I always say, people, it's so funny, I talk to people about this, like, oh, but no, this and that. And I'm like, okay, so if they turn into death camps, is that when you're going to wake up and realize what's going on? And like, well, I'm like, okay, so death camps are okay for you. Is that it? That's not crossing the line. Like, I always try and figure out with people, what's the line for them? Is it prison camps for people with COVID or unvaccinated are not the line? What if they're death camps? Is that the line?
It's interesting because in 2015, a law was not passed, but considered in New York State. You could Google it. It's called A416. And it basically says the governor, at his or her discretion, could detain someone indefinitely if they view them as a threat to public health. Well, and
hold
of course,
on, didn't
law
that law just get proposed just recently in New York? Like a couple months ago?
No, that's the interesting thing. It was 2015, but now it's being brought up again, same law.
Exactly, again, yeah.
Right. And now people are saying, oh yeah, that might be reasonable. So because of everything that's happened, where of course back in 2015, nobody considered it unreasonable. And so it's the trend that is scary to me.
So this seems like such an easy solution to me. Why don't we just have a couple of places where people are all in for any form of tyranny as long as it gives them whatever safety they think they're getting from it. And if that's your orientation, cool, then California, New York, Illinois, whatever places decide that they're going to be tyrannies for safety or however you want to frame it, cool, go there, move there, go. And everyone else who's like, no, I want freedom. Yeah, maybe there's risk to it. Cool, but I don't care. Then you come to Texas and Florida and the South or whatever, right? Like, we can still be America. We just have different states that are going to have completely different orientations to life, liberty, and happiness. Great. Put your fucking mask on. And go live in your pod and eat the bugs and do what these sociopaths tell you. As long as you're not fucking trying to tell me what I have to do, I don't actually give a fuck. Like, seriously, I don't care.
I've had this conversation on the podcast with two very smart, educated people. One was a constitutional expert. The other was someone you and I both know very well. One guy pointed out that in the Constitution, it does say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I said, well, isn't the forced shutting down of every single business in the country against the fact you can't deprive people of their right to make a living without due process? And he said, no, because in the Constitution, life comes first. And I didn't really have an argument for that.
I can make up a bunch of shit too, right? That, yeah. Like, it doesn't make it true. That's fucking nonsense in no way, shape, or form. It's sort of like people who say, my favorite of the misreadings of the Constitution are the people who are like, oh, well, the Second Amendment only applies to organized militias, the military, so people shouldn't have guns. No, motherfucker, that's not... Not only is that not at all the framers' intent, but literally the words don't say that. Literally they don't. They say... Here's the easiest way to understand the Second Amendment. I'm going to paraphrase it. Because a nation needs to have a standing army, and that standing army has guns and is dangerous, individuals not in the army need to have guns as well. That's what it fucking says. That's what it means. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are not an or a ranked triplex. It's absolutely not. If anything, America and all of its founding principles were antithetical to putting life above freedom. That is the opposite of why America was founded. That is the opposite of the principles that this country stands for. But look, if someone wants to fucking die for climate change or for COVID, I don't fucking care. As long as they don't try and take me with them, I'm good. Go fucking kill yourself. Go live in your fucking pod. Go surrender. I don't care. Just leave me alone.
So like in your article, you give a timeline of how you started to feel that the shit was going to hit the fan. And in March 2020, you mentioned you were initially for the lockdowns. I think we were probably both equally scared of where it could lead. I'm more always worried about slippery slopes because I would look at a furniture store. What? Nobody was ever in a furniture store. Why does it need to close down for COVID? It's not like there's a lot of people crowding. And I use this as an example of furniture store, but it's not as if right. like people are crowding wall to wall in the furniture store, like, get me that chair. Right. So like, I always wondered, why do you include restaurants and furniture stores and, you know, weddings all in the same category, that this could be dangerous when you're just shutting everything down and everyone is like, everyone was shaming everyone else. Like in the same time, I would ride my bicycle in Central Park and people would shout out, wear a mask. And right, you're not, you can't transmit it outdoors. And B, you're just, it's not like I'm spinning on anybody.
There's no one else there. No, my right. favorite are the people still to this day. You still see them sometimes wearing a mask in their car alone driving.
Right.
talk about the ultimate sign of submission. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Or here's the thing too. I was just in Las Vegas and you have to wear a mask, but then you go to and you have to social distance. There's signs everywhere. But then you see a blackjack table and everyone's drinking, so no one's wearing a mask and they're all sitting right next to each other. Exact spot where you should be doing it is when you're not doing it. And everybody was just walking around social distancing. And they're all wearing fake masks anyway. Like everyone's just wearing these like
masks with holes in them. Right.
Yeah. Or they're wearing like exactly. Like nothing. So it does start to get crazy. And by the way, everyone's got COVID now anyway. So like everybody I know has Omicron at this point. So what started to really trigger things for you?
I don't know if there was one event, man. Honestly, like I'll admit, like I was fooled in March, like totally. And then by April, though, it's like there's a playbook for dealing with pandemics. It's existed for a long time, and nothing anyone was doing was by that playbook. Like lockdowns have never been part of the playbook. That's fucking nonsense. They don't work, as evidenced by the last 2 years. By the way, if you think they fucking work, then bless your heart. Because at that point, facts obviously don't matter to you. But lockdowns were never part of it. Masks were never part of it.
Although you can't ever prove a negative. Like if you say that to someone, they'll say, well, it would have been 10 times as many deaths if we didn't do the lockdowns.
Well, they can say anything. I can say I'm 7 feet tall and black. It doesn't fucking make it true, man. Like just because someone says something, who gives a shit? Fuck them. Like, I don't care. Yeah,
true.
But there has been a playbook that has been used for 100 years for actual pandemics. Whether it works or not, who knows? But like there was one that everyone agreed, you know, World Health Organization, whatever, this is the, and then all of a sudden, literally, not before, not right before, but like during, like, nope, we're not doing this. That immediately started setting off yellow flags. And then the reversal on masks came really quick. And then all kinds of other weird shit happened where I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense. If this is actually a serious public health emergency, then nothing that is going on makes sense with that. Now, looking back, if what you have is a small group or a small set of groups of powerful people whose goal is to cripple or destroy America, then everything makes sense. Now it's like, okay, look at what's happened in the last 2 years and ask yourself, from what perspective does this make sense? That's really the only one. Now, I'm not talking about like low. A lot of what's happened are just low-level sociopaths in power who don't want to give up their power, right? Which is a whole different thing. Like, I seriously doubt like some New York City commissioner is in any sort of international plot of anything. No, they're just the type of idiot who goes into government because they want power over people. And now they see, oh, pandemic gives me power. I'm never going to let this go. That's a different situation. But like, if you look at like everything that's happened, none of it makes sense from any other perspective, man. It's so funny too, to watch like so many people who I used to think of as pretty reasonable and logical for a year and a half try and grapple with what, none of these policies make sense. What about this? What about that? And they refuse to see, oh, wow, maybe my model for why policymakers or why people in charge are making decisions is wrong. Like people like Eric Weinstein or Sam Harris or all these fucking people who like, it's like, wow, man, I thought you people were smart. You're actually fucking stupid. Like you can't see a fucking con right in front of you. It's obvious. Maybe it's just because I understand media. Maybe I've been on that side of media for so long and I've seen behind the curtain for so long. I just know what it looks like. And this is the most I've ever seen of anything that's an actual fucking, just a fraud and a con. I mean, how many examples do you need? The whole COVID thing, you can be like, all right, I get it. Fine. Like things can happen. You can make arguments, but then all George Floyd thing, man, like I said in the piece, man, that video was so gut wrenching, dude. I fucking cried watching. That's horrible. And then riots started everywhere. Right. And the best part, like, you can't beat that cry on from CNN where it's like the black reporter standing in front of the fire saying mostly peaceful protests.
Right.
And come on, stop it. Like, the mainstream media tried to sell you that these riots were peaceful protests. It's like, you're going to believe me or your lying eyes? Right. So, right. Do you want to keep going? Like, how many more lies do you. Like there's some that are scared, like borderline, like COVID early, maybe you could say is borderline. You can maybe make a good case. Okay. Election. That's why I don't even want to talk about the election because it's so fucked up. And there's so many religious dogmatists on the other side with the election stuff. There's so many people who are like, Donald, like they think Donald Trump is some saint. I'm like, he's a narcissistic fucking asshole. Even if you did like him as a president, he didn't give a fuck about you. And so it's like eject the things that are borderline. The summer 20 riots, the January 6th insurrection, keep going. There's some that are just unarguable.
Let me ask you this, because obviously, right, the George Floyd video was horrific. Somebody needed to speak out about many things there. But at the same time, you would have 20,000 people gather for a protest and they didn't need to wear masks. They didn't need the social distance.
Right,
and meanwhile,
exactly.
Uptown, a restaurant would be shut with outdoor dining would be shut down in the exact same city. What got me was in Seattle, I think it was in Seattle where they had the their own zone. It was the
autonomous zone.
And teenagers, there were two teenagers that died in that zone, murdered. And the guy who was like quote unquote in charge of that zone, he's like selling t-shirts on the web right now. Like, what? How come there's no charges? There's no nothing. Like, he wouldn't let police or hospitals, ambulances come through. Like, I don't understand why there's such obvious hypocrisy and people did not see. And I know this eventually leads to the what becomes doom or optimism, but why didn't people call it out then? It frustrated me.
So it gets back to what you talked about at the earlier, very early part of this podcast is hierarchy, right? One of the embedded parts of hierarchy is identity, right? Like if I care about the writer hierarchy, it's because I identify as a writer, right? And so there are so many people in this country, everywhere. It's not just America. It's just everywhere. But like whose identity is tied into, well, I'm this type of person or I'm that type of person or I'm in this group. And I mean, one of the only long-standing and replicable results in psychology is that people will ignore facts to preserve their either sense of self or identity, right? And so, yeah, most people, what this last... I thought I understood how brainwashed most people were before 2 years ago. I was wrong. I was way wrong, man. I had no idea. There are so many people who I thought, James, if I'd made a list of the smartest, freest thinking people I knew, like let's say the top 50, you would have been on that list. You'd have been somewhere, right? Probably in at least the top half.
I appreciate
right?
that.
Right? So of that list of 50, right now, I'd say maybe 20 are still on the list.
What would you see from the 30 that fell off? What did you notice?
They are so embedded in the standard, whatever you want to call it, the standard institutional narrative that they will literally ignore facts. They will literally ignore what they see and believe a lie. So that they can stay in that group.
Like if you point out basic hypocrisy, they think they will have some rational reason why it's not hypocrisy.
No, they won't. What they'll do, they'll redirect. They'll be like, well, what about, right? And they'll talk about Trump or whatever the fuck, right? They'll redirect. They'll make an argument about something else. They'll come up with some other argument. They'll say, well, but what about this? But you forgot about this or no. I've had a couple of people who I'm close to have these conversations. They're not that hard to break. As long as you get them one-on-one and you don't get angry and you just like approach them with pure curiosity and just keep asking questions, what you end up doing, and I've only done this about 1,000 fucking times, is that you break their minds. Like literally, they can't, because all the facts, or at least the majority of them, are lined up against their identity. And when you just ask enough questions from the right way and they realize they can't reconcile, they either get violent, they get angry, they refuse to talk about it, or you break them. Like, I mean, you can ask Veronica. You know Veronica well. She's seen me do this at dinner to people where it's like they shut down. They can't keep functioning, and they have to. They start crying. They leave. They do something like that. And I'm not talking about angry debate. Angry debate never works. If you yell at them or scream or throw facts in front of their face, then it actually makes it easy for them to defend. Right.
Right.
So the opposite way, the way you get people, is that you just from a place of curiosity and kindness and softness, just keep asking. But how does that work? But why this? You can actually do that with anyone with almost anything, because virtually no one understands why they believe what they believe about hardly anything, right? And so like you can do that. Like it's a very easy technique to use if you just, like there have been times in my life where like, I to be honest, like I'll be talking to some person, I don't like them, and I'm like, all right, fuck this, I'm gonna break them. And I just decide I'll do that, and I'll go, not even independent of the last 2 years. But like, no, dude, that like, just start asking them, why do you believe that? So explain that to me, hold on, but what about this? But what about this? And just keep going. And then generally, they run out of shit.
Because let's do this, because I've had these conversations many times, and usually my approach is a little different than yours, which is I give up, meaning I'm not going to keep going until
they cry or break. See, I either don't start or I finish them. those are my only two perspectives.
I'll only go about 10% of the way, because I'll think to myself, you know, it's not worth it to me to go all the way with this. But let's play devil's advocate. Like I'm going to say, oh, everything was justified with the lockdowns and the vaccines and all this stuff.
Yeah, but you don't believe that. We can't role play it because you don't believe anything.
All right. So I'm just curious, because I think the technique of breaking is interesting. It reminds me, though, of Peter Boghossian. I don't know if you read his book, Having Difficult Conversations, where his thing will be like, okay, I'm 60% there. Get me the other 40%. Like, it sounds interesting what you're saying. Get me the other 40%. Like, what about the fact that 20,000 people were allowed to protest, but you were still shutting down furniture stores uptown? Like, you know, and they say, well, they were only protesting. I don't know what people would say, actually. I have no idea.
Right. See, that's why we can't role play, because you don't believe any of it, because it's bullshit.
But why was this happening? Like, why don't people see the hypocrisy? Like, if you point out the hypocrisy, no one will admit that it's hypocritical.
James. Because most people, when faced with truth or group, pick group. They pick status.
But if you say, is this hypocrisy, yes or no? And they say no, when it's so obvious to anybody.
Either they'll say, dude, it's what I'm trying to explain to you, man, is that the stages of when I break them. First, they'll deny. A lot of times, they'll then recognize and say, I don't care. I still believe it anyway.
Yeah, I see.
Because when faced with truth or group/status, most people pick group and status.
So what they pick also is faith, right? So yeah, so yeah, faith is this ability to assert something that you don't have any proof of.
No, see, hold on. That's a little different. Belief without proof. When most people say faith, they're talking about religion, right?
Right.
Belief without proof is a different issue. Like the technique I was talking about, curiosity, doesn't actually work well on religious people. Like it doesn't break religious people because most of religion is made. I don't necessarily mean God or spirituality, but organized religion. It's a made up set of beliefs, right? And so like, but at the core of it, why it works, the mental hack that organized religion figured out thousands of years ago is faith, right? That you believe without proof. So that's why it always makes me laugh. It, like religious people have arguments. I'm like, why even argue? You believe without proof anyway, right? So like that isn't faith a core tenet? And they'll say, yeah. I'm like, well then why are you talking about facts? You don't care about facts.
Right.
That's actually when they get angry, which is weird. But this the approaching with gentle, kind, but tenacious curiosity only works on people who think they're being reasonable and rational and logical. Because that is a part of their defined self, right? And so that's what you're breaking.
Well, it's not all doom and gloom. Stay tuned for part two.